on the board we bang, rapping about what we think ought to be. And I don't mind him switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down our country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a way of life, or fighting in it, often died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country horse, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down our country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a wheel of life,
yes, if you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Lots more news and views for our people, and those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning. In the European heartland. Well, what do we have in today's National Post? That's one of Canada's national newspapers. More apologies. People seem to be apologizing for something. I'm not against apologizing if you've done something wrong, but, that's, I guess, a sign of a mature person, but political correctness seems to have us apologizing all over the place. I just seem to have missed this somewhere. The good reason we missed it, it's the wrong day's paper. I think. Yes, the wrong day's paper. Well, on the break, I will try to get the right day's paper. Anyway, no lack of news and outrages and so on. I'd like to thank Sam in Regina for sending this my way. This is a part of a continuation of the story about the kneeling protests on the NFL. This is headlined, this could be the end of the season for the NFL after receiving devastating blows overnight. You've probably heard the saying, read the room when making public comments. This means you should know your audience before you say or do something controversial. Players in the NFL apparently missed that because the results of their antics are in, and those overpaid ball players are having some serious splaining to do. players and coaches alike who took a knee while the national anthem have stirred a huge media frenzy, as many Americans consider their actions offensive. The NFL's declining viewership has turned into a nightmare for the league, as their right-leaning fans are refusing to watch any more games. And this is something my co-host on the Trump Phenomenon, George from Maryland, has said for several years, that these football players who refuse to honor America's traditions, America's flag, that's their right. But if they want to make a spectacle of themselves, well, that's what they're doing. They're not doing this on their own time. viewers have the right, probably even the duty, to hit back and say, well, okay, you want to make a statement. Well, it's a statement I don't agree with, and I don't have to support you by watching the TV. And if even a significant minority of people do that, this will have a huge impact on, of course, what Major League Sports is really all about these days, and that is the bottom line. The bottom line is viewership. You've got large numbers of people watching your games that the advertisers can charge a lot more for advertising, the league can charge a lot more for advertising, and that's really where the money is. And anyway, back to the story. The Washington Examiner has the latest round of bad news for the NFL. That's the National Football League in the United States. Their sponsors and the racist players whose jobs are on the chopping block. The National Football League is feeling the impact of the Trump effect. Ticket sales, since he went on team owners, he called on team owners to fire players who take a knee to protest the national anthem, have cratered. Read that again. Ticket sales have gone way down. The online ticket resellers TickPick told Secrets that sales have dropped 17.9%. That's pushing 20%, far more than the usual week three fall. From TickPick, 17.9% decrease in NFL orders this week compared to the previous week. Last year, the drop was 10.8%. This means that while the regular season might still be in full swing, the season to protest is over. With viewership numbers reaching startling 20-year lows, despite an increasing population, the viewership is in serious decline. The league can't afford any more setbacks, and they're going to have to do something drastic to win back their irate fans. We've seen a massive decrease in NFL tickets ticket purchases this past week in comparison to past years. Week 3 seems to usually have fewer ticket orders than week 2, but this year ticket purchases are down more than 7% from this time last year. Now that is significant. While we can't specify if this decrease is due to the president's comments, players and owner protests, play on the field, or simply the continued division of consumers' media attention, the conversation around the NFL this week is focused on the president's comments, as well as the players' and owners' reactions. As viewers continue to abandon their NFL Sunday habits, both the numbers of ticket sales and the purchase price of tickets will drop. And that means less revenue. Oh, you can't tell what's causing these declining numbers, says this writer. It could be due to the hundreds of thousands of fans who decide to stop attending games after getting slapped in the face with disrespect. Or perhaps protesting players in recent days telling outraged fans to take a hike. Business owners are also decreasing their patronage as they are increasingly reluctant to be associated with the kind of activity that flies in the face of American values. And most of the bulk of the football aficionados in the United States are white, mostly male, and many, probably most, to some degree, nationalistic and patriotic, and they don't like what they're seeing. Business owners are also decreasing their patronage as they are increasingly reluctant to be associated with the kind of activity that flies in the face of American values. Al Wiseman of Freedom Daily reported on restaurants who have opted out of showing the games at their establishments. Mom-and-pop restaurant owners are actually responding to the rich, spoiled, oppressed hypocrites in the NFL that kneeled in protest against the national anthem during Sunday's games by shutting off TVs in their establishments. This comes after President Donald Trump denounced the protests and told sports fans to never condone their actions. This is not an easy thing for the restaurant owners to do, since their profit margins are known for being very small, and they make a lot of money when people come in to watch sports games, eat chicken wings, and drink beer. A lot of Americans are protesting, and it doesn't really cost a thing. In fact, it might even save money, since fans aren't shelling out the cash to see a game. This is just the beginning of the problems that the NFL faces. As Prissy Hawley reported, the league could soon be forced to find their funds from places other than the American taxpayer after government officials get finished dropping the hammer. Unfortunately for the anti-American National Football League, empty stadiums and plummeting viewership could soon be the least of their concerns. If these subsidies suddenly end, all the NFL would have to fork out their own money to build and maintain these fancy stadiums, meaning they'd have no choice but to listen to their angry fans and put an end to these protests. As these cocky players continue to disrespect our country, our police, and every American soldier who fought, bled, and died to protect America, the one thing they didn't consider was the will of the American people. After refusing to listen to their vast patriotic fan base, now they'll be incurring the full wrath of Republican lawmakers who overnight could ruin everything for them with this wonderful piece of legislation. They might be able to keep playing for now, but with a multi-front attack that the American people are launching on them, the NFL is going to have to make some big decisions soon. Otherwise, football as we know it may be a thing of the past. I mean, a lot of people, and in fact, George from Maryland was saying that the football, as he knew it, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, just isn't the same anymore. For one thing, the makeup of the teams now largely black, it's different, and the insolent attitude of some of the players, of course not all, but some of them, the ones in the knees protests, really are annoying. Anyway, here's another outrage for the anti-racists. Dirty Chinese restaurant game blasted as racist. Markham is a suburb of Toronto, a city just north of north and east of the city. Markham developer defends mobile game as satire. A Toronto area company's coming video game called Dirty Chinese Restaurant is being denounced as racist, but the business says its product is meant as a satire. Big O Tree Game says the game, in which players chase cats and dogs with a cleaver, scavenge for ingredients, and dodge immigration officials, in no way is meant to be an accurate representation of Chinese culture. The company says the game is coming out soon for Apple and Android devices, but it has yet to announce a release date. A New York congresswoman this week urged all platforms not to carry the game or any other that glorifies in hurting any community. Oh, what about offending white people? Oh, well, that's okay. In a Facebook post on Monday, New York Representative Grace Meng, I wonder what ethnicity she is, says the game uses every negative and demeaning stereotype that I've ever come across as a Chinese American. And this is actually from a Facebook posting by Grace Meng on Monday. I wish I could say that I was shocked, that there is a new video game soon to be released called Dirty Chinese Restaurant. This game uses every negative and demeaning stereotype that I have ever come across as a Chinese American. From the names used for the characters of the game, to the types of food they cook, to the disturbing depiction of their faces, the game epitomizes racism against Asian Americans. I fear that prejudice othering of Asian Americans remains a form of racism that is too frequently brushed off and tacitly accepted. Racism against Asian Americans is just as harmful and pernicious as racism against any other group, and we must call it out when we see it. How we portray people matters. I urge Google, Apple, Android, and any other platform not to carry the game Dirty Chinese Restaurant or any other game that glorifies in hurting any community. That might be a rather hard thing to do. Many games hurt the feelings of one or another person. Okay, so that's from Grace Meng, and she's a representative, I think, in New York, a New York congresswoman. Ontario Premier Kathleen Wynne also condemned the game on Twitter on Thursday, saying racism has no place in Ontario. This is what she tweeted. She's our lesbian premier. This type of racism has no place in Ontario. I know this does not reflect the values of the people of Markham. what a twit this woman is. Racism has no place. It's a humorous thing. It's like the jokes about Scotsmen being very cheap and Scotsmen wearing kilts have, nothing under their kilt, etc., etc., etc. Talking about eating animals, this is, while it, of course, would not apply to every Chinese restaurant, perhaps even to most Chinese restaurants. Chinese restaurants have repeatedly been raided for serving animals that they should not. Years ago, it was regularly believed that many Chinese restaurants skimped on the meat and served cat, maybe dog. Certainly, it's considered a delicacy to serve bear paws, and it means killing the bear for very little of the body. Anyway, the Big O Tree, big letter O tree. And that is the, the distributor of the game, has issued two trailers for the game, which show the protagonist, Wong Fu, dumpster diving, evading tax collectors, and sabotaging competitors. The videos begin with the company's logo and tagline, "Because being politically correct is so boring." Yes, and this is a satire. It doesn't mean all Chinese are dumpster diving for food or screwing competitors and so on. The politically correct are devoid of humor. And this is a character, personality deficiency. That's one of the distinctions between higher level animals and lower level animals. Zoologists believe that some higher level animals play. You've seen kittens play, puppies, dogs play, but lower level animals perhaps don't have that sense of irony or suspension of belief that's necessary for play. Anyway, I'm going to play the trailer for this. I'm going to see if we can... Big Tree, being politically correct, is so boring. Dirty Chinese Restaurant trailer. Don't just stand there gawking. Serve those customers, says the owner. Cook, operations, warehouse. Anyway, it's difficult to describe this, and I think I ought to stop because this is really very visual. So I will just continue with this article. The company defended the game in a statement posted on its website. It's come to our attention that our small independent game, Dirty Chinese Restaurant, has upset some people due to its content. Our game is mainly satire and comedy influenced by the classic politically incorrect shows we grew up watching, such as South Park, All in the Family, Sanford and Son, Family Guy, Simpsons, and Chappelle's Show. We also listen to Jay-Z. So far so good. I hope they'll stick to their guns. Let's see what else they have to say here. Here's an interview with the developers. The interview's not available. Okay, learn more. Well, what's that? Not help very much here. The company describes itself as a small independent game studio, making games no one thought possible, and says it strives to create entertainment that we all want to experience, which is fun, addictive, and hilarious. And that was a write-up in the Toronto Sun today. As usual, the answer that the politically correct, the lesbian premier of this province, and various other people protesting and complaining, have no sense of humor. And that is a character flaw. One might even say perhaps an intelligence flaw. And the answer, as always, isn't to say, well, I wouldn't buy that game. It's suppress it. What does the lesbian premier mean by this type of racism has no place in Ontario? What does she mean, no place? They should withdraw the game, or somehow it ought to be suppressed. It's hard to know. why is that racism? Looking at racial differences and characteristics, they will call them stereotypes. Stereotypes are really only a generalization based on reality. Would she deny that there are Chinese restaurants that have served animal parts? I mean, outside the accepted, chicken, beef, and pork, and duck, and shrimp, and things like that. Would she deny that sometimes Chinese restaurants are dirty? Well, she would only have to, and that's against some, not all, she would only have to consult the health department of a big city like the city of Toronto, in which she lives and where her government offices are. Chinese restaurants are regularly cited for horrific health and safety violations. Mouse or rat droppings in and around the food. One restaurant that was temporarily shut down a few years ago had food storage in buckets in a washroom. Yeah, you don't have to
have a wild imagination to think that, you know, food ought to be kept a decent distance from splashing urine, and well, you get the picture.
That is not a game like that. Is first of all a game. It's not a polemic. It doesn't say all Chinese are dirty, or exploit their employees, or are a gambling, or of course not. And anybody who would read the game as an accurate portrayal of reality, or let's say a complete portrayal of reality, misses the point. And what is frightening to me is this sort of denunciation that all too frequently characterized the discussion. Anyway, I had a good experience earlier tonight. I was on the Ken Dividend Show, and this is it's like Skype, but it had involved three-way streaming. Ken was for a time the American Freedom Party presidential candidate in the last election. He wasn't at the end, but he was beginning. He is being a board of directors, a member of the board of directors of the American Freedom Party. I am the international advisor to the party, but because I'm not an American citizen, I obviously cannot be on the board of directors, nor would it be proper for me to be so. Anyway, on tonight, kind of as a co-host, was another one of my friends, a doctor from Louisiana, from New Orleans, Louisiana, Dr. Charles Edward Lincoln. And so we had a very good discussion tonight of a number of things. We had a discussion of, my two issues in general. I always introduce myself this way. My two big issues are free speech and immigration. Not enough free speech and too much immigration. So we discussed those and free speech restrictions in Canada. And I got the feeling, and this is not a criticism, just a feeling, that the Ken Dividend, who kind of throws topics out for discussion, said, well, I understand you don't have the constitutional protections of free speech in Canada that we do in the States. And I said, well, yes, that's true. I said, but a Canadian diplomat would disagree and say, oh, no, we have a Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which says that every person has the right to freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of belief, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly. And I said, you know, that's true, but that's Section 2B of our Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Section 2A says you have all the freedoms in 2B, subject only to such restrictions as are demonstrably justified in a free and democratic society. Now, if that sounds a little bit legalistic, it is. And what it means is, don't count on those rights, because the government can take them away, the courts have ruled, as long as they do it for a good reason, whatever that is, and provided they don't go too far. So, sure, you've got freedom of speech, but because they've decided, Supreme Court, heavily influenced by a really out-of-date, 10th-rate report by a Jewish psychologist written in 1965, have decided that hate is largely irredeemable, or hate in speech. So therefore, hate speech has very little value. And although, yes, legislation that restricts freedom of speech, like Canada's notorious hate law, well, yes, of course, it does
violate your right to freedom of speech. No doubt about that. Probably your right to freedom of the press in some cases. But nonetheless, the Supreme Court wrote in 1990 in the Taylor decision, that's okay because fighting hate is a good thing and the government doesn't go too far. It's only the more extreme expressions, so the court said, etc., etc. So we discussed that, and we also discussed, of course, that topic problematic, and that's the topic of the so-called Holocaust. And we all agreed, the three of us, Dr. Charles Edward Lincoln, that guilt created by this story, the Holocaust, is something that is a big detriment to the West and to us. That it is held over our heads, and I said we did not get into the detailed critiquing of the Holocaust, but I said there is the what I call the long route and the short route. The long route is the one that's been tried to some extent by historian David Irving, by linguist Dr. Robert Faurisson in France, whom I know quite well, and I know David Irving, and of course by Ernst Sundel and many others, Guillermard Rudolph Jim Rizzoli, and that is this what you may call the rational technical critique of the Holocaust, the so-called Holocaust story, and that looks at things like, well, the numbers don't add up, and I'll just take that as a statement. I'll make that as a statement. I won't go into it. David Irving has pointed out that the Germans documented everything. You know, they were very much for record keeping, and they were very paper oriented. And it's a joke, but it was said you needed a written permission slip even to go to the washroom in the armed forces. That's an exaggeration, but the point being, the German army, in fact the German government, was not given to mavericks. People didn't go off doing their own thing, and one of the key problems for the Holocaust story is that it is that there is no order. That's right. That's what David Irving said. He explored the archives and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I've been to the archives." That's the way he speaks at his lectures. And that was one of his great strengths. He liked to go to original sources, not just rewriting what historian A and historian B said, or historian C, and taking maybe a slightly different point of view. He wanted to go, he wanted to go to original sources. Anyway, and he said, even after the fall of the communism, that and access to the archives in the former Soviet Union, one thing that was not there was anything like a paper trail. If these detention camps had been for mass extermination, and there are many other good reason arguments as to why they might not, that might not have been the case, but if they were, the camp commandants wouldn't start executing people, not without an order from their superiors, and their superiors wouldn't give them orders for mass execution of people without an order from the very top. And that's the problem. That's one problem. There isn't an order. No sign of it. No sign of a paper trail. Anyway. That's what I would call the long route, but I said there may be a shorter way to get this Holocaust bogeyman, or it's really a religion, this new religion, off our backs, and it's this. Now,
I won't discuss the new religion of Holocaust in the sense of trying to dispute numbers or things, anything like that. But I'll say, well, okay, let's assume it's as the Holocaust religion tells us. Well, first of all, whatever the Holocaust was, did not happen in Canada or the United States. Secondly, we didn't do it, whatever it was. Thirdly, it didn't happen to Canadians or Americans. So it's some other tribe's story. It may be true, it may be partly true, it may be wild exaggerations. I'll go with the latter, wild exaggerations. But it's not my business. It's not my tribe's story. Frankly, I'm not interested. And I think, especially for younger people, and you know, World War II ended more than 72 years ago, 72 years and a couple of months. Almost everybody alive today, or the vast majority of people alive today, are like me, born after the Second World War. We didn't do it, whatever it was. It didn't happen in our country. It didn't happen to Canadians or Americans. So why should we care about it? You know, to be quite frank. And here's a quarter, call someone who cares. And I'm not going to feel guilty about it, because we didn't do it, whatever it was. And that may be another way to approach things. Anyway, we talked about those things. And if you're interested in hearing the show, just email me at paul@paulfromm.com, and I'll give you the URL, because it'll be up tomorrow. I'm going to take a short musical interlude. And this is a guy, I like his songs. Some of them are a little on the raunchy side, but this one is not Sitting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee. It's Rebel Sun. I hope you like it. Thank you.
was getting low. So I thanked him for our talk, cause it was time for me to go. While walking to my car, I turned to thank him once again. But the light was bare, there was nothing there but rotten dirt and sand. Wasn't my imagination playing with my head? I remember hearing clearly every single word he said. Every movement, every gesture, every tear that his heart shed. His dream is still alive, even though his body's dead. Robert E. Lee's memory lives on in the Southern soul, along with his boys who fought and died out in the cold. Lee was a man with tons of courage, a hero without a doubt. He was a man with determination, he was a man from the South. And Robert E. Lee did not like them Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. He said, son, I've got many stories to tell. Ulysses S. Grant, kiss my ass and go to hell. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be. And I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. Drink him up, bro.
Sitting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee, and that's Rebel Song. I'm going to play another one by Rebel Song. This is called Mr. Confederate Man. Hope you like it. It's kind of an emotional story.
I was just a little boy in elementary school, English and math and science class, learning the golden rule. I learned how to add and how to subtract, how to multiply and divide. I learned about bugs and I learned about plants, and I learned how to read and write. But my most favorite class of all was my last class of the day, when my history teacher would tell us tales of old times long gone away. I was amazed at the way she knew all the people and their names and the places and the days. That's when I first learned about General Lee and his 13 rebel states. One day she came to school with a big brown grocery bag. She opened it up, we all helped her hold up this great big egg-shaped flag. She said, class, now only a fool will tell you this flag is a symbol of hate. It represents the men who fought and died with pride for our Confederate States. Your assignment tonight, I want you to write, I want you to pretend that one of these brave men came back to life. Now what would you say to him? Well, the school bell rang and I thought, as the bus carried me across town, I got out my pencil and my notebook pad, and this is what I wrote down. I wrote, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. disturbed Confederate land. Next day in history class, I put my paper on the teacher's desk. Then she called me up in front of everyone because she said she liked mine the best. As I walked up to the head of the class, my teacher smiled and she nodded at me. Then I saw a tear roll down her cheek as I began to read. I read, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man. At home reading through the news just the other day, when I ran across my old teacher's name and I saw where she had passed away. With a bittersweet smile I looked up at my wall, a wrinkled paper in an old wood frame, where underneath penciled words almost faded away, she had marked a great big red A. Plus, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man. I rose, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man.
That's Rebel Song, Mr. Confederate Man. I'm going to play one more tune and keeping on our Southern theme. And this is the South Will Rise Again. We sure hope so.
Ain't playing no possum. He's the number one country man. Charlie run the devil out of Georgia, Lord, and the South's gonna rattle again. Yeah, the South's gonna rattle again. God is wrapped up in a movie scene. Take us to the White House, and Willie's gonna open up the door. And Gilly's selling bulls everywhere you go. They're made out of wood and tin. The ground's gonna shake like a big rattlesnake, and the South's gonna rattle again. Yeah, the South's gonna rattle again. Thank you.
That's Hank Williams Jr., and that ends off with God Bless Dixieland, and I think we could all agree with that. Well, at least I'm sure my audience will agree with that. Well, I'm not a football fan, or I don't follow it very closely, but it would be hard to have read the newspapers these past couple of years and not have learned about the antics of Colin Kaepernick. And he's an Afro-haired Negro, or is he mixed race? I think he's mixed race football player who identifies as black. Colin Kaepernick started an NFL movement. Kaepernick started out taking a knee during kneeling down rather than standing, which is the proper form of respect for the national anthem. And he did that last year to protest police brutality. But his activism has since expanded to encompass a wide range of leftist causes, including a group named after a convicted cop killer. Oh, well, he's a good Negro, this one, I'll tell you. What refusing to stand for the national anthem has to do with protesting alleged police brutality? The police are not the United States of America any more than Donald Trump is the United States of America. A country is more than one person or a group of people. I have nothing but contempt for our current trust fund kid prime minister, but I'm still proud of Canada as a country, as a people, and I will stand for the national anthem, even though it's not the anthem I particularly recognize. I recognize the Maple Leaf Forever, which is the anthem with which I sign off. But if I were at a public event and they played the official national anthem, O Canada, I will stand for that. I'm not honoring Pierre Justin Trudeau. I'm honoring the country. Anyway, back to Colin Kaepernick. The Colin Kaepernick Foundation donated in April $25,000 to Asatha's Daughters, a Chicago direct action resistance organization. Direct action means taking to the streets, and probably violently, honoring Asada Shakur, who escaped prison and fled to Cuba after being found guilty in 1973 of the murder of Officer Werner Forster in Chicago. So she's a cop killer. The grant includes $2,500 for Cop Watch, a program that trains volunteers to follow and video police, and $15,000 for teen training, part of the group's commitment to develop and train young people age 4 to 19 in the black queer feminist tradition and in the spirit of Asatha. Not to quibble here, but the program is teen training, but it's to teach young people age 4, assuming that's not a typo, to 19. Well, you're not a teen actually till you're 13, right? Anyway, to train them in the black queer feminist tradition and in the spirit of Asatha. So he's promoting, well, of course, it's racism, it's for black people, queer and feminist. This guy is a whack job. Apparently, Mr. Kaepernick is also a fan. He retweeted on July 16th a message wishing Shakur a happy birthday. Shakur is still in Cuba. The contribution came as part of Mr. Kaepernick's pledge last year to donate $1 million over 10 months to organizations working in oppressed communities. Oh, I see. Yes, Negroes benefit from affirmative action in the States, but I get it. They're oppressed. Okay. So far, he's given $900,000 in grants to 31 organizations, including apolitical services like Meals on Wheels, as well as advocacy groups pushing a left-to-center agenda on issues like abortion, climate change, criminal justice reform, and immigration. Now, of course, it's certainly his contributions, including $25,000 to 350.org, a climate change group dedicated to fighting fossil fuels. Okay, so if you, like me, believe in the gas and oil, he's no friend of ours. $25,000 for the Center for Reproductive Rights. That's an abortion organization. $5,000 to a health clinic partnership in the now defunct Dakota Access Pipeline. $25,000 to United We Dream in order to keep DACA in force. DACA, of course, is the Dream program to allow children of illegals to stay in the United States. Anyway, it's his perfect right to spend his money as he sees fit. I'm not suggesting he doesn't have the right to spend his money in that way, but I think it's also perfectly legitimate to see him as an extreme leftist. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 4 in the morning. I'm sorry, 8 in the morning. Boy, we're getting all punchy tonight. 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever, which I thought I had here on my screen. Anyway, the Maple Leaf Forever, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.